Hello and welcome to Keep On Cybertruckin', a podcast where EV enthusiasts share their experiences with their EVs. One thing that I reveal today, I put out my video, is I am a happy owner of a Hummer EV. Will has his Rivian. Chase has his Lightning. What's going on with the Lightning, as a matter of fact?
Oh, I just got it back this week.
Oh, okay. So,
It's bright and shiny new. So if you're curious, the final bill, I know I mentioned last, like the estimate was about 7,000. Final bill came out to about 11,000.
Wow.
So pretty pricey, but.
And what was the big components that kind of jacked that price up?
They were able to find all OEM stuff, which is great. They didn't have to do any kind of salvage parts. It's really like two whole new doors and then like that whole side body panel. So all of that had to be replaced.
So essentially the front cab, the whole driver's, the passenger side, right?
Yeah, passenger side.
The whole passenger side needed to be replaced.
Yeah. And then what's kind of cool about that is that in order to do that repair, they actually had to take off the bed. And I called out when I got there. I was like, hey, you know, notice the gaps on either side of the bed. They don't really line up. And I was like, was that from the impact? And they kind of said, well, it's typical that it could come back from the factory with like misalignment like that. I'm like, oh, that's funny. But the cool thing is, since they took it off, they made sure to line it up perfectly when they put it back on. So,
okay, good.
Kudos.
So Hugo's in chat. Hey, what's up, Hugo? So Hugo's asking, he goes, there we go. What's up, guys? Say it ain't so, Eric.
What's wrong with the Hummer?
Got fired.
It is so, Hugo. I elected to go with the Hummer EV.
Which variant?
I got the SUV and I got the dual motor. So that's what I elected to go with. The main reason I talked to Chase and maybe Will about this last week before we started the podcast was at the end of the day, I'm a truck guy. I like big, bulky trucks. And so when I went and test drove all of the vehicles and then even comparing the Cybertruck, at the end of the day, the Hummer was the one that made me feel like I was in a big truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just missed that. I like that. A lot of people hate that. And I understand that. A lot of people go, why? Why would you want to feel like that? Don't you want to be in a truck but feel like you're driving a car? Yes and no. For me, I'll be honest with you, the year of driving the Cybertruck, I kind of missed feeling that truck. So I really, really wanted to go back to the Cybertruck, to be honest with you, but my good buddy Sherwin, check out his YouTube channel. He went on the Rivian video with me to check out and introduce me to the Rivian and kind of show me the ins and outs of it. So I really appreciate him. But he just, about 2 weeks ago, he has a 48,000 VIN on his Cybertruck and his inverter just went out. So that really was kind of like what was, man, like, I don't know if I can do this again.
It's rough. Well,
I really hope that anybody that has a Cybertruck doesn't have to deal with any of that, but that was kind of just the cherry on top for me of, I don't know if I could do this. I don't know if I can go on camping trips and deal with all that again. So Hummer's been good so far, and I hope it continues, so I'm happy. We'll see what time will tell. But for today's episode, there's a few things that we wanted to go over. One thing, I think a really big thing, is the new truck Slate. It's a new manufacturer that's coming out. We want to kind of go over that vehicle.
Out of nowhere. I feel like everybody got blindsided.
Exactly. We also have some information from Rivian. Rivian is incentivizing people to purchase their vehicles. I wish I would have known that maybe a couple of weeks ago. Maybe that could have helped. I don't know. But so they're incentivizing. We'll kind of go over that. And then also Elon news, some speculation of things that are happening within Tesla and Elon. So we'll kind of cover that as well. But I think we want to get into Slate. I think that's the big news. Mm-hmm. I think that's something, a big topic right now. And so let's go ahead and I want to pull up their website and kind of show this new auto manufacturer, soon to be at least.
I feel like it's an interesting evolution of Elon's kind of his master plan back in the day. It was whatever he touted. You know, make a luxury car and then make a luxury SUV and then make a mass vehicle. And then make a truck. And this company is seeing kind of the fertile ground of being like, okay, there's lots of coupes, there's lots of sedans, there's lots of SUVs out there. But it seems like the trucks are a place where is something that people are looking for, because it's like nobody has a darling electric vehicle pickup truck. And mm-hmm. I think that they just came out and just said, you know what? Rivian's thing is adventure. Tesla's thing is about sustainability in the future. Slate, they're just like, this is about economy and getting exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. What is effectively either a work vehicle or it could be a personal vehicle. This is like so cool.
Both. I mean, what convertible truck have we seen in the market? Nothing lately, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, right here, you could see on these slides, there's 25 slides, and it's just kind of showing you different configurations. And so, mm-hmm. like, this one, mm-hmm. this version right here, if you opt to get this type of kit, I mean, what does that look like? That looks like the Rivian R3, right? Or the R3X. Right here, this looks like maybe like a Bronco type of a vehicle. This looks like a Jeep.
Oh, that's cool.
Straight up work truck, you know, everything that kind of flirts that line where it's like, hey, you know, if your identity is your work and your play, this is kind mm-hmm. of, they're posing themselves to be this vehicle for it at an extremely aggressive price.
Yeah. And in a way that it's interchangeable too. Like I said, like you can, so the whole anytime. Configuration,
yeah, it's amazing.
You can take out the seats and the bed cover and then you have a truck again, or you can slap it on and you have a Jeep. Like there's so many things you can do with it. And I think that's kind of what they're going for. That enthusiast, the tinkerer, you know,
price. It's very modular. Well, that's great that you brought up the price because they're advertising it as less than $20,000 with incentives. Mm-hmm. For the very base model, I believe gets you about a 52 kilowatt hour battery, and that mm-hmm. will give you roughly 150 miles. I think you can elect to up that to like 82 or 84 kilowatt hours, right. And that gives you about 240 miles. So you're not getting huge range, but I don't think that's really mm-hmm. what they're the consumer that they're going for. One thing I noticed too is that it does have the NACS, the NACS port. So they're jumping on that, which is great. I believe the charging speed is maxed out at about 120 kilowatts, which isn't fast. But
the battery isn't huge.
It's a small battery too.
But the battery's not huge, exactly. So you're going to be able to charge that fairly quickly, but you're not getting, you know, 350 kilowatts speed. So, but that's, like Will said, it's a small battery, 52 kilo. I mean, what is that comparable to? Probably a Model 3?
Yeah, I think that like the Model 3 has the, or sorry, I think there's two versions that are out there, but yeah, the 55 kilowatt hour Model 3 battery, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, they're really kind of stripping it down. It doesn't even come with like a stereo. It has the crank windows. So it's really taking you back to old school, which I think a lot of people will appreciate. I think maybe mm-hmm. 8 years ago, people would go, what are you talking about? Why would I don't want that? That's stupid. But I think mm-hmm. vintage is kind of in right now. And people, I think, will kind of be into that. And I think they're kind of really embracing that and mm-hmm. really just going for it.
Well, we talked about there's companies out there to do like EV conversion kits for like an old truck that would have all that, but you're still spending $20,000 for a conversion kit. So
100%.
This fits right in there. Yeah.
And I'm thinking like for maybe younger people who like, you know, you've got work, but then they also go surfing on the weekends. Like just seeing, mm-hmm. you know, this kind of crossover in a truck at a price point that is so attractive. I mean, come on, like. What other EVs at this price point?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I didn't even really think about that, Will. So
that's ultimate ultimate economic value in a space that does not have anything represented there. And for this price, I mean, I'd be thinking about like, hey, if I want an electric vehicle, I don't do long road trips all the time or something. Yep. I'm in college. Mm-hmm. I'm in high school. Even you know, you got to put this is like finally I can get an EV. Yeah. Finally, I can charge at home, you know.
The Nissan Leaf, brand new, 2025 right now, base price of $29,000. So there you go. And it's the same range, 150 miles.
Yeah, I really didn't think about that until Will said it, that I have a soon-to-be 14-year-old. And, you know, I mean, think about it. In about 2 years, he'll probably have his license or be getting ready to get his license. That's about the time frame that Slate's supposed to be delivering these vehicles.
Yeah.
I mean, $20,000 and he can customize it and he doesn't need a lot of range.
Yeah.
Because he would be just commuting to school.
you as a parent don't have to be concerned with the 0 to 62.9 second or the ridiculousness kids get into with cars. Like, this is kind of the perfect car to be like, oh, you drove it into a ditch. You're in. I'll do it. Okay.
We don't want that. I get your point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that whole, like, you know, you don't put on your best clothes for every day, you know? So it's like, you know, mm-hmm. they've got a bit of a beater or whatever, but they're, I'm not saying that everybody will be disrespectful to it. I'm just saying, at this price point, it doesn't hurt as much to hear about
it. You know? Yes. And right here, you could see it says a snap to wrap. A slate is engineered to be wrapped, not painted, so you can change the color again and again. Wrapping a slate is easier compared to traditional wraps thanks to its innovative paneled exterior design. And with wrap kits starting around $500, it's more affordable too. Mm. And that's also cool for the young, you know, like my teenage son, you know, he can kind of, you know, for $500, he's able to mm-hmm. change the colors here and there and kind of express himself. I mean, I think that's kind of cool.
And you know there's going to be an aftermarket. You know there's going to be a DIY market mm-hmm. for this sort of thing. I mean, it's just, it's finally in that price point. I feel like everybody's sleeping on this. The fact that, I mean, this may be the first EV to kind of cross over into that new generation of, hey, we're going to start selling new cars to younger people. This is at a price point they can afford, unfortunately. And yeah, and it's like, yeah, you know, it's a work truck, but I could do some cool stuff with it. It's like people buying an old Jeep Wrangler, you know? I mean, you're not working as a chauffeur in a Jeep Wrangler. It is what it is. It's rough. You can take a hose, spray it out if you need to. This is kind of that, I think.
Kind of reminds me of like a taco, you know, the small taco trucks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, we have Jay in chat. He's saying hello. Hey, Jay. Thanks for joining us as always. Mark's in chat. Mark, thank you for joining us. But Mark makes a good point, and I didn't think about this at all. So, you know, that's why we do this. He says, I have a feeling that fleets would be snapping these up as they don't need as much range, and the simplicity simplifies maintenance and repairs. 100%
true. 100%
true.
Like, this is officially a fleet vehicle that you can do. Nobody's going to drive it 400 miles out of town and ditch it somewhere. It doesn't have the range. Yeah. You know, you do superchargers with the NACS. I'm sure that that's going to be a part of what the announcements down the road. Yeah.
Any kind of small delivery truck, mail truck even, you know, other things.
If they can deliver it, and then, you know, think about the profitability, and I bet you anything that they're smart enough to be like, we got the cost down here by doing things to offer us scalability on the back end. So it's like, yeah, this is a 55 kilowatt hour battery, but down the road, I wonder if they're going to be like, oh, by the way, we also came up with a longer range or electrical components that require a larger mm-hmm. battery, like a 220 outlet or something like that. Just it starts to really kind of come together. It's like it's like mm-hmm. the perfect Lego piece. You just, this is the base, and now they made it so that you can scale it up. It's cool.
Yeah. Speaking of scaling down, because I know we were hearing interviews that Sandy Monroe was involved with this as well. That they had close communication with him to try to find different ways to cut costs. But also, they even said at one point they shared like some warehouse space with them before they like outgrew it and were able to move onto their own. So it's definitely coming with some heavy information behind them and some experience to really cut down the cost. So
yeah,
I think if anything, that's probably the biggest concern I saw online is like, well, if they can do it, and it's a lot of like the, you know, that, well, we'll see. Cause I think people are looking at what Rivian's doing and they're like, yeah, Rivian's going to bring the cost down, but it's also like, you know, how are they going to do bring it down?
Well, that's the question. And then the other answer to that question is, okay, you're going to bring the cost down and that's a wonderful thing. But are you going to bring it down to a new market? Are you going to bring it down to a place where you can play where nobody else has? And so far, nobody else has been willing to do this kind of a deep cut of simplicity. The ultra super sci-fi pretty looking EV with a, you know, even I've advocated for it, a better, you know, passenger or rider experience, places to charge, little monitors or something like this. This offers the scalability to add all that stuff in. But you don't have to buy it up front, which is great.
Yeah, it's really one of those things. I mean, Will took the words out of my mouth. I literally was going to say that they just, it's one thing to come out with the vehicle and you sit there and say, okay, we need to cut costs because we want to make this affordable. So mm-hmm. we're going to take out a screen here, or we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then people are criticizing like, oh, what the heck? I would never buy that because this and these slates going, we're taking everything out.
Yep.
They're just leaning fully in. We're taking everything out. This is going to be bare bones. This is our business model. and you go do what you want to do with it. And I think people are going to jump on board with that because, I mean, yeah, if you compare this to a Cybertruck, right, or to the Lightning or a Rivian or this, that's, they're not competing with them. You know, that they're sitting there saying, we're in our own space. We're the Lego of the automotive industry, as Will said, you know?
Yeah, we don't need deliver. We don't need to over-deliver a bunch of luxuries.
Not at all. We're going to give you the basic platform, and you go do what you need to do with it to make it your own. That's, in my opinion, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Fun fact, that bed is the same size as the R1.
Exactly. And I think that that's, I think that they were probably smart in doing that because, you know, this isn't a heavy-duty delivery truck type, like you know, dropping off heavy equipment, has a crane attached. It doesn't seem like that's this truck, and that's fine because they're like, that's not who we're selling it to.
Exactly.
The price point makes it so anyone can find a use for this fucking thing. You know,
yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, there's a guy in our neighborhood that he drives around those little ACTI trucks because you can there's something happened with the import and you can actually get them for a decent price. And yeah, he just runs around and it's so unique. He uses it as like advertisement for his business because people are like, what the heck is that? Because he'll pull up and has to like take the steering wheel off to get out because it's just so small.
Yeah. What was, so hang on, here's a question for the cast. Maybe someone will bookmark and clip it. What were you guys' first cars?
Mine was a Honda Civic.
Like what year? What year was it?
No.
What did it have?
Oh, shoot. It was...
Even if you don't remember the year... Like what was it about it? You remember it? Was it like you know? Did it have like a crazy good CD player? Did you add a bunch of stuff to it, or was it just kind of
no?
This is what I could afford.
At one point, I took out the back seats. Yeah, I put a sound system. I was really into I replaced everything in it. You know, because I was into it. I did DIY. I did it all myself. So I had subwoofers. I did the speakers. I did the head unit. I replaced the amplifiers. I did it all. All the wiring. I did all that. So that's going back to the slate. I think that's where the appeal is. People sitting there going, I want to dive into this from a DIY standpoint. And I want to just, you know, that's kind of make it my own.
Like my first car that was like mine, my daily driver, was an 89 Chevy Blazer. It had a pretty, I think it had like a 4.3 liter engine. It was more car than I needed necessarily, but it was also more weight, so I couldn't get in too much trouble. Like it didn't accelerate that. But like, yeah, it's like, I think it came with like a tape deck, air conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, I had, back then, you were grateful for those things.
Yeah.
And then we all had our tape deck to CD player adapters and stuff like that. But yeah, it's like, that's always been one of those things where I'm like, yeah, all the EVs that they're missing right now, it's like, it doesn't give the user a lot of chance to kind of make it their own anymore.
Exactly.
Like you buy a Tesla, you buy you know, a Hummer, you know, and it's great, you know, because it's a turnkey thing that you're buying. The luxury, the experience, the enjoyment of it, you've evaluated, it's yours. This seems like kind of a blank slate that you can kind of make your own. And I think that this is literally the first EV that I've seen be like, hey, make it your own. Like, that's, you know.
My first vehicle was a 95 Ford Windstar minivan in teal.
There you go.
Damn.
So once again, so Chase just leaned all the way into it. God, he's like, damn. I'm going to have a minivan. No problem. I want the damn thing to be in teal.
So the thing is that it was definitely the hand-me-down. But I mean, as you can see, I'm not afraid to like buy a Cybertruck because I grew up with a vehicle that everyone could spot from a mile away. But then at the end, like going in high school, like having a minivan, you were the coolest kid in town because we'd get out from band practice and be like, hey, let's go to so and so's house. And like, how are we gonna get there? Like, Jesus, got a minivan. We'll load up everybody.
Yeah. You could carry maximum people. You were now the that should be the lesson again to everybody going to college or whatever. It's like bring a car. You'll be
You wanna be popular? Wanna be popular?
Yeah.
Have as many seats as you can.
As many seats as possible. Get a bus if you can. Get a Sprinter. Yeah, get a Suburban. Get whatever you... Just the more people you can cart around, the more conversations you can start.
Yeah. What's...
We have an Environmental Canadian in chat. So thank you for joining us. We have Chris. Chris has been joining us every week now. So Chris, we appreciate you. He's congratulating me on the Hummer. So thank you. And then Environmental Canadian says, my first car was a 1968 Sunbeam Alpine baby blue convertible. So
nice.
That's a slick vehicle.
Baby blue race car.
Yeah.
Whatever that song is.
What were you gonna say?
I was going to say about the slate. It comes in, you know, bare bones cheap, but honestly, from the outside, it doesn't look cheap. Like, if outside of maybe having, like, it'll depend. We'll see how those steelies come out. Like, the bare bones steelies. I think that's the only thing they would give it away is, like, cheap. But if they could have the steelies and then come up with maybe, like, you know, a Rivian or even a Tesla-style, like, hubcap cover over it that makes it look nice, I think, yeah, this would be the sexiest-looking cheap car you could find.
But once again, I see what you're saying with that. But once again, I think if you're leaning into the whole just bare bones, then the steelies is what you want. You know, it's kind of like, we're going there. You know, we're going there and it's fine. I find it interesting right here. We were talking about payload, 1,400 pound payload. And I know that's total payload for driver and everything. But that's a lot better than I thought it was going to be honest with you. I mean, the towing capacity is probably around where I thought it would be, 1,000 pounds, which isn't great. But once again, it's not meant to be, you know, you're towing your 30-foot RV behind it. You know, that's not what this is.
Interesting. Safety, they didn't chip on that either.
No. Another thing that I know that they're not putting in the slate is any type of autonomous driving. There's not going to be any type
of... There's no cameras. No. There's none of that. Yeah. And here, so what is it? Quick math. What's the total payload you said? 1,700?
1,400 pounds.
1,400 pounds. Okay, so... Let's say we're not going to put a 400-pound man in there. So let's put a 200-pound, 200-pound driver. So that brings the total capacity still to 1,200 pounds. That's a half ton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you need a load of rock or whatever you're going to need. Whatever you can fit in that bed is probably going to be fine.
Yeah, like you said, Chase, a 5-foot bed. I was showing right here, if you look, they kind of show a comparison of the truck with the outline of the Chevy Silverado EV, obviously much smaller. But when you go to the Ford Maverick, it's comparable. And then for fun and kicks and giggles, this shows the 1985 Toyota SR5 pickup, and it's larger than that. But then when you go over here to the SUV kit, here's a minivan, Chase, for your comparisons. But right here, I think this is interesting. When you look at the Wrangler, the two-door, it's actually longer than the two-door Wrangler.
Be more foot room in the back.
So that kind of gives you a really good idea of what the size is going to be. It's initially I'm thinking, oh man, this thing's tiny. But when you think of it in that regard and you're thinking of a two-door Jeep Wrangler, they're not, I mean, they're small, but they're not tiny. It's not a smart car, you know? So
it's not more than what it is. Nobody's sitting here being like, it'll drive itself and make you money. As a cab. None of that shit's happening. You've got a battery, a frame, and a vehicle. And I don't think a lot of the manufacturers are interested in making those up until now because there wasn't the huge margin.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I mean, I'd be curious to know what the margin is for the assembly. Because, I mean, the it's a 55 kilowatt hour a battery pack. I'm like, okay, so that's probably half the price if it's under $20,000. I mean, that's a lot, isn't it? So...
Yeah, no, definitely. The battery is, I'm sure, is everything when it comes to cost.
It's absolutely that. I think it's like literally the highest single component cost because everything
by far.
Stamped parts, added together, even labor, just the battery exceeds all of that.
Okay. Here's some really interesting info. So one thing I was going to bring up is that, this is obviously a private company still. They haven't gone to market, so there's still kind of some unknowns, but... Do you want to take a guess at which multi-billionaire is actually backing it?
Elon Musk.
No, obviously. I'm
Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah?
No, seriously, yeah. Bezos in 2013 offered up $111 million in a Series A founding, as well as a few others.
So,
I mean, it's not entirely, you know, outlandish because the word slate is an anagram for Tesla. All the same letters. So
that's funny.
Yeah. Pretty solid shot across the port bow.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that. That's a great one.
I'm now in the frequently asked questions section, and here's an interesting one. Does the slate have heating and AC?
No.
No, you're going to have to pay extra for that.
And yes, it does. It says, yes, the slate comes with heating and air conditioning. I was curious. I was like, does it? We might sweat every detail, but we don't want you to sweat. Okay, that's fun.
That's fun.
Yeah, that kind of equipment back, 30 years ago was considered like a premium order. It was difficult.
Yeah. I wonder if it's got a heat pump.
They've gotten as good. Yeah, exactly. A heat pump is exactly the solution that they probably have under the hood.
Yeah.
It's like, because it's so dirt cheap.
Both for thermal and AC.
Yeah, exactly. It could do heating, it could do cooling, absolutely everything. And it could, and I wonder if it's integrated to the battery, because I've always wondered that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if you want, you know, normally in the heat in a car in a combustion engine vehicle, it diverts some of the heat away from the engine, from the exhaust, to the passengers. And so I'm like, all right, well, can't we use some of the battery heat to heat the cabin or something? But it's never seemed practical until they came up with the
That's a fun thing about the Ford F-150 that I learned at the body shop. They said there's about like a foot and a half between the actual side of the body and the housing of the battery inside. Because they went in to inspect it and said that there's actually a decent crumple zone there. As well as it's actually like centered on the frame. It's not like centered over the cab and the front half of the body.
Well, I'm right here looking at, there's a question that says, what are the vehicle warranties? And so I was curious about that. And it essentially says, you know, more info on that to come. So, I mean, they're still in the very early stages. So I wasn't expecting, I was curious about that though, to see, you know, how much are they confident in their vehicle, but you know, they're very, very early stages. So, that's the slate where I'm kind of very intrigued and excited for that. We were talking before the podcast started. Do I reserve one? Do we reserve one and let you audience kind of pick out the specs and we wrap this thing with the Keep On Cybertruck logo on the side or Keep On Slate? I don't know.
He's got his credit card out. He's ready to go.
Go right here. Start typing some stuff in.
Keep On Cyber Teslin.
So we'll see.
Cyber Slayton.
Let us know if you want us to reserve one and make one podcast worthy. I'll do the podcast in the back of this thing.
Exactly.
So
come on, influencers buying cars to do ridiculous things. That's exactly how we carried the Cybertruck.
I wonder if the Frunk will chop off my finger.
Yeah,
it's composite. You know, I don't know.
Do it before that other guy who puts his foot on everything does it. He orders a slate.
Or Jeremy.
Jeremy, that's right. Yeah.
Where's the Roadster?
Yeah, where's the Roadster?
Yeah, we're going to get a sub $20,000 electric vehicle pickup truck before we get the Tesla Roadster 2.0. This is not aging well.
Last thing on the slate is they did confirm that it will be built in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's something that is exciting. You know, the fact that they're going to, it's, you know, U.S. built and made. So.
Yeah,
that's one thing that they did announce, that it will be manufactured in Indiana. So that's really cool to hear too.
Which just a cool thing about that. Sorry, it's a former printing plant that they're taking over. So they're going to save time and money on building the place.
100%. Which is go ahead.
I'm sorry. Just to wax marijuana. I think that it's interesting that it's like, you know, I think, you know, we know that Bezos has this background with Musk. And they've obviously both gone their own ways. You know, Musk wildly successful with Tesla, and Musk, I hear he has a good company doing stuff. I don't know, but the fact that he backed Rivian now with the Rivian delivery vehicles, now they're scaling that up. I think it's interesting that we have these two kind of formerly, you know, close and in proximity to each other billionaires, one who is absolutely going hardcore on the passenger driver experience. The consumer level of transportation versus Bezos, who is like, well, I've seen it firsthand, and industry and work trucks are just as ripe for conversion over to more EV base. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it seems like he's putting his money where his mouth is if he's investing in this company, pushing it forward. And it's a smart play. Because it's like, if you know, you see a lot of EVs on the road, but I don't see a lot of EV work trucks of any kind. I don't see, we see the Cybertruck as an advertising billboard. But I don't see as many, you know, I don't know, Chevy, you know, Ford F-50 Lightnings that are work trucks. I don't see them on job sites necessarily. But I think that this is kind of the encouragement to that.
It's an easier way to scale, because if a company is going to buy in, they're going to buy in hundreds of trucks, not just one or two.
Exactly. Fleet pricing, I bet, is possible with something like this versus Tesla, where they're like, no, you have to pay the price of the vehicle.
Yeah. Which specifically, so the price of the slate, they said, I've heard a lot of people saying about 25 is the number I think they're going to shoot for.
I think it's 25, but they're saying then you have the incentives, so that brings it closer to 20 or even, you know, below 20, sub 20. No, I think they got something there, and I think if Bezos is behind it, then, you know, the chance of it actually happening is much greater. Because I know we've talked about it a lot on the podcast that you see all these EV concepts come and they go to these car shows and then you never hear from them again. And so let's hope that doesn't happen with Slay. I hope that doesn't happen with any company. I always want them to succeed. But I think if you have Bezos backing you, then I think your chances are that much greater. So hopefully it comes to fruition. Environmental Canadian is in chat and he says, how will Trump's tariffs affect the price of the Slate pickup truck? Well, once again, if it's mostly built in the USA, then I think that wouldn't have much of an effect on it. But obviously, there's a lot of components and computers and things that come overseas. But once again, Slate is very bare bones. There's not a lot of things into it. So it's basically you're getting, based off of what I understand, you're basically just getting a battery and a shell and then pedals and a steering wheel. Yeah. It's essentially what you're getting.
And it's not a lot of electrical components that I think originate in other countries. Like you said, there's a wind down window. I mean, you know, there's other stuff you can add on, and obviously that's going to have whatever premium is directly impacted by tariffs. But the core vehicle, there's no part of it that I think that you can immediately look at and be like, there's no way they can achieve 80% or better assembled in the U.S. from U.S. parts on that. It's like, yeah, it's metal. It's painted with a matte thing that you can wrap, and you know, there's pedals in the car and there's seats. That's it. You know, it's like, yeah, all of that could be assembled here. That's fine.
And yeah, I guarantee that's what they're doing right now as we speak. Yes. It's like trying to find sourcing as much as possible to get that percentage up.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And how to join those together to come out with the most cost effective.
And then I think it's also, like Will said, this came out of nowhere. This wasn't on anybody's radar. So, you know, obviously the whole tariff conversation has been going on for a few months now. I think if they felt like they couldn't achieve that dollar of $25,000, $20,000 with their advertising, they wouldn't have said anything. They wouldn't have made this announcement. I think they would have just waited a little bit longer, kind of see how things shake out. But for them to make that announcement now, I think they have a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to achieve that number.
Yeah. I think, though, it could have been because of the tariffs they came out and announced themselves now to build up that buzz and get more eyeballs on them and maybe more connections to be able to make that happen.
That would
more
make funding. A lot of sense because it's like if investment is lagging up and down, we don't know what's happening. The ability to just put this company out there to be like, okay, here's something to focus on amidst all the other stuff. It is kind of striking while the iron is hot. It's a weird circumstance to do it in. But yeah, actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Speaking of Elon, a report came out, I think today, where Motor Trend is reporting that, the Wall Street Journal has released, in their article, it says the Wall Street Journal released a bombshell report saying that the skittish board, Tesla board, had begun approaching executive recruitment firms to identify a potential successor to Musk. This would have been unthinkable even recently, with many investors and Tesla fans sticking by Elon's side through this rocky phase, convinced the CEO has peerless impact on the company's share price. But after hitting a peak late last year, Tesla stock has slid to roughly half that value, even with a market-wide rebound of late. So it seems like things are kind of... people are nervous.
Here's the thing. So Motor Trend is writing an article about the article, the said article from Wall Street Journal. Just late last night on Tesla's main account, they tweeted basically and saying it was completely false.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tesla's arguing that it was that, you know, that in their response that they never gave because they don't have a publicity to respond to the article before it was published. Their response now is that, you know, oh, it was, you know, not true. None of this is accurate, blah, blah, blah.
But what it did do is drastically, like the hit piece basically came out yesterday afternoon, and then the stock price fell like 4% after hours, and then it started to rebound. But my guess is that someone financially like tied to shorting stock wanted to like get out of their position and then had this hit piece go out.
Makes sense. But at the same time, and I'm not, obviously I have no clue, what's true or not. We're just here to report and talk about it. But wouldn't that be Tesla's response? Oh, no, this isn't true.
Fair. Yeah, like if it is actually happening that they want to kind of
They don't want to say that because I think the stock price might go down even more. You know?
Hence why they tweeted it out like just after midnight. So they were trying to get it out there before market opened today.
Exactly. So, I mean, once again, I have no clue. I don't work at Tesla. I'm not an executive at Tesla. But even if I was, I think my job is to say, oh, no, this isn't true.
It's right. I mean, it's worth noting, you know, aside from obviously the Wall Street Journal is owned by Jeff Bezos.
Another Bezos.
Talking about that.
Connection.
But the other thing is that in the article, it does mention that according to a number of people close to the thing. So I would imagine this wasn't just like one lone board member speaking to the Wall Street Journal. And I don't think that – I think that it's like one of those things that's kind of embarrassing, but it's kind of – I don't know. It's like – I mean it's not even as bad as like, you know, finding out your spouse has a Tinder account. Like, you know, like how much – it's a betrayal. But it's also like, dude, you know the game. You're the chairman of the board. You're not, you know, whatever. You're kind of running things. But if you fuck things up, the shareholders are going to be like, oh, we need to replace you. This is business, my guy. This isn't personal. You want to make it personal because so much of your identity is wrapped and shrouded in Tesla. It's enabled so much of your wealth and position right now. But it's like, at the end of the day, Tesla has a responsibility to their shareholders. And to look back at the last several months of what's been going on with their stock and where it is now, where it was recently, where the whole market is headed, I think that it's completely within their rights to evaluate whether it's worth replacing him. And I gotta believe the reason that they haven't done it up to this point, because it's not just having a succession plan, but there's gotta be something else with his involvement with Tesla. I still maintain that after he got kicked out of PayPal so unceremoniously, when he wanted to make it this internet everything, whatever, and him to then immediately pivot to Tesla, I gotta imagine that there's something in his contract that's practically like a dead man switch. Like, you know, like there's some amount of stock that immediately reverts to his at a price that they've, you know, current market or something that just makes such a huge payout and such a dent in Tesla to get him out. I feel like it's gotta be there.
Some type of like poison pill.
Yeah. It's like if he gets terminated, immediately it triggers a stock sell-off at the current market value of 100,000 shares that were pledged to him the day he started, so that the day of his severance, it's immediately like a severance package that's guaranteed by stock or something huge. I don't know. But it's one of those things. It's like, and I feel like so many other people have been fired for way less than what Elon has unnecessarily done to the brand. You know, it's like having the separation between him, you know, he can do politics, everybody can. But at a certain point, it's like the company's going to be like, is this necessary? Like all of this uncertainty, all of this volatility, is it necessary, especially when so many people that work here get paid in the stock? How would you feel if your paycheck varied from, $100 a week to $4,000 a week? Like, how do you live your life like that? How do you run a business like that? I feel like there's a part where Tesla used to be much more stable and enjoyed having a firebrand like Musk involved. But it's like they've got so much market share and they know that it's hurting because of his antics. And there's just a part of me that I'm like, it is absolutely within the right to pursue a succession plan. And for everybody to be all aghast like it's a soap opera, it's like, no, this is business, guys. Come on.
I don't think they could. Honestly, I don't think they could even afford to buy him out, though.
Like, exactly.
Like he's got what 12%? Like I did the math. I think last I heard he had 12% of the market, or 12% of owned shares, and then
12% of owned shares
of current market cap is $900 billion that they would have to buy him out. So
yeah,
there's no way you can do it without him. I think that if anything, they could make him, you know, a creative role on the board and find a successor that way. But still, I feel like that would even. It would have a negative reaction to the company as a whole. Still,
it's the position that they're in, they're stuck in. As are we all, just on the day to day. So it's to me, it's kind of like they can try to do whatever they want. You know, they're a business. Everybody's smart until they lose all their money. But I'm just I really just think that you know, Elon has got something that's ensuring his longevity at Tesla, or that severing him is at such a dire cost that that's why it's not been evaluated to this point. However, and I think that that's what everybody's in minds is like, what, you're going to get rid of Elon? Like, you're going to fire, you know, Eddie Van Halen, or, you know, get rid of David Lee Roth from Van Halen? Like, how do you do that? Like, I don't know. They'll continue on maybe, or they'll suck. Who knows? But that's absolutely an obligation to the shareholders at that point to be like, yeah, look, we need to start evaluating possibilities for a succession plan.
What I just said, actually, I was wrong. 900 billion is the market cap. 12% of that would be just over like 100 billion, but still, yeah, I don't think they could afford it.
Which still, as a cash payout, would be nearly impossible unless they had that, unless they had the stock sitting on the side. So otherwise, to buy him out of his active shares, right, or he immediately gets triggered a payment of withheld shares or something like that. I don't know. It's just,
because they only have currently,
I feel like people get fired for way less. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, huge smoking guns, but it's like the overall friction that's caused so unnecessary. You know,
they only had a 37 billion of cash on hand in Q1 this year. So yeah, there's no way they'd have to sell a ton of stock to be able to buy him out.
Yeah, I think the only way, if you were going to replace him as CEO, I think the only way you can do it is with him being on board with it. He would have to agree to step away because he's wanting to be involved in whatever else he wants to be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's okay with helping choose his successor. And I think that would be the only way that he would step down as CEO. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know how that would all work and how that would play out, but it's definitely something to watch. I think no matter what, whether the report is true, you know, they always say where there's smoke, there's fire. So I understand shorting, and there's always that type of stuff that's going on. So that could be at play here, but you know, you never know. Who knows? There must have been a conversation somewhere within that board to, you know, maybe they were having a meeting and someone threw out, hey, you know, hey, have we ever thought about this? And then, you know, he could have laughed it off and I'm just messing, you know, and that could have then triggered
it. It
could
have been enough to write an article about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to subscribe to the idea that if you're reading about it in the news, it's already old news. Like if you've heard it in whatever media, if Wall Street Journal has it. If the Wall Street Journal has it, it's already an old story. It's already like been dealt with. It's been priced in.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody who mm-hmm. knows about it knows about it. And it's kind of one of those, like, oh, yeah, everybody found out about that. Yeah, yeah, all right, whatever. And, you know, Elon's, I'm so mad. But it's like, you can't imagine that either side is ignorant to what the other is doing. If the board is taking if they're basically looking to fight Elon and kick him out, you know that both sides are aware of it. You know that Elon's got his connections to be like, yeah, there's some talk. Yes, of course there's talk. No, they're actually putting out feelers. They recruit. They talk to this firm and this firm. Shit. Okay. Well, you know, that could have been January. That could have been February.
Mm-hmm.
We're reading about in the news in April. I don't know. That just kind of makes sense to me. So
real quick, Environmental Canadian says that he loves your Van Halen analogy. Will.
Thank you. Thank you. It was either that or Ozzy when he left Black Sabbath and then Ronnie Dio took over. I am of the ilk that believes that Black Sabbath with Ronnie Dio is way, 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 way better. But that's just me. But yeah, Van Halen, it's like, yeah, he's like, everybody's like, yeah, David Lee Roth gets fired and it's like, everybody's like, oh, which way do you go? I mean, who's the band? The band's called Van Halen, but you love the front man. So which one is it? Do you stick with Tesla? Or do you go with Elon Musk?
I don't know. We will continue to follow this, though, if wherever this goes or it doesn't go anywhere.
Wrap this back into Kim Kardashian is the question.
Well, I don't have any Kim Kardashian news, unfortunately, Will.
David Lee Roth and Kim Kardashian seen at the mall together.
Yeah, holding hands while they're walking their Optimus. We can, I don't know how I'm going to segue this, but let's go ahead and get into Rivian.
Speaking of walking your Optimus.
Rivian's sending out some emails. They're sending out this email that's stating that they will cover your down payment on your future R1 purchase. So what it says is nothing but adventure, your down payment's on us, so you can start exploring. Ready to make the most every summer outing. At least that adventure ready R1 dual with max battery and performance upgrade. And get your down payment covered by us when you take delivery. I really want to see the small print on that.
So I think the small print is that literally it's just the R1S dual mode, not the quad or tri, the dual with the max battery. So when I ordered my R1S over a year ago, well, I'm sorry, actually 2 years ago at this point, damn. When I ordered mine 2 years ago, I had looked at the range differences and the battery sizes, because back then I was pre-ordering. You could either get the standard battery, you could get the large battery, or the max battery. And I remember, I want to say that the price differences was standard battery, zero price increase. Large battery was a $6,000 price increase to go from, you know, to basically hit 351 miles. And then to get the 410 mile max pack, that one was $16,000. So it was the large in addition to the max became $16,000 in addition. So I was like, I'm not getting that one. I'm fine with 350 miles of range. That's great. I think that they probably have an overabundance of these now. So now they're willing to eat the down payment on the leases. But it seems like, according to the language, only the leases, only those leases, which started around $1,100.
So I wonder how do they calculate the down payment? Is it just the base down payment? I mean, or...
Yeah, whatever they have as a down payment for the lease, you know, it's probably... I mean, they absorb the $7,500. There may be a ticking clock that we the public aren't known, but I think the government maybe knows about if the EV rebate is winding down and for which manufacturers, you know, under this administration, if it's going to go away, what's the last day for submitting claims? So some of these companies may be like, well, screw it. We'll eat the down payment so we can get the EV rebate, use that as a down payment, absorb a little bit of the debt, and get another vehicle on the road.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So yeah, so for anybody that is in the market for EV and specifically had their eyes on Rivian, I would 100% go check them out.
Yeah, it's the dual motor performance with the max battery. So I think that it's like the 0 to 60 is like 2.9 seconds or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you get you basically just get the dual motor instead of the quad. So if you're a super off-roading, then, you know, maybe pump the brakes, but yeah
I think you're fine. But I mean free money is the way I'm looking at it if you're already in the market. So I would 100% jump all over that. Jay's in chat. Jay says that he loves Elon, and he's also stating that he got a note on his Cybertruck, and on the note it says that he's a Nazi.
What? This is the first time hearing about this.
Yeah, this is all new to us, you know. This is,
yeah.
So
wait, your Cybertruck wasn't on fire long enough to put a note on it? What?
Yeah. So, you know, we've said this. We've had the strong stance from the beginning, because when we got our Cybertrucks, there was a lot of love, but then there was a lot of, or not a lot, but there was people that
little fingers and things. People didn't you know. I don't think people knew which way it was going to go. They were like looking at these cars being like, yeah, it's cool, I think. But yeah, is everybody going to be thinking, is it cool?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And regardless of how you feel, I've always taken the stance that there's no need for vandalism. There's no need to leave notes on people's cars. If you feel a certain way, then you can feel that way. That's perfectly fine. I have no problem with that. But I just don't see, like, what do you get out of it? You know, leaving a note on the guy's car. I don't see the point of it. I mean, I'm perfectly fine if you sit there and say, I hate Elon. You hate Elon? All right, fine. You hate Elon.
Mm-hmm.
You love Elon? Perfectly fine. You love Elon. I just don't understand. I don't get the act of going and find, I mean, just so you guys know, Jay, I've met Jay in person. So Jay has my phone number, and he actually sent me the note. And it looks like, I don't know, Jay, you can correct me if I'm wrong. It looked like you were at a golf course, because it was literally the scorecard, and they wrote on that and left it on his, you know, on his windshield. So, yeah, I don't know. It just, I don't understand it, but, you know, what are you going to do?
So, interesting. I just came across this that's kind of related to what we were just saying about the tariffs that I just saw. Today? Yeah, this evening. So I guess Canadian auto parts that are compliant with the CUSMA will actually be hit by the tariffs.
Okay.
Which could be interesting for, you know, local trade deal for people like Slate that are just trying to do that. They're trying to find ways to kind of skirt around it, but keep it as local as possible.
Well, speaking of Canada, Environmental Canadian says that he's only gotten love and thumbs up for this 2-week-old Cybertruck in Canada. It's near Toronto. So that's awesome. I love that people are giving you thumbs up and not the bird. But no, that's really interesting. That so they're essentially saying that parts coming from Canada are unaffected. Is that what I'm understanding?
Basically, there's a little bit more red tape than that. But yeah, that's kind of the central idea.
I think I've got an idea. I got an idea how to fix everybody accusing Cybertruck drivers of being Nazis. Just get a sticker or whatever size sticker you can come up with. Maybe just wrap the whole thing with the trans flag. That powder blue, pink, white flag. Just have the trans flag on it. It'll completely negate the Cybertruck and everybody will be like, what? They'll spend more time staring and be like, wait the fuck a minute. And the light turns green, you'll just go.
I think that would do it. I think that would 100% do it. Just throw them off. Hey, throw the first punch. You know?
Wait a minute.
They roll down the window and shout Black Lives Matter, drive away. They're like, what the fuck is happening right now?
You just confuse them at the most.
Sometimes that'll work, you know? Just make them scratch their head and go, wait, what just happened? You know?
That was a Cybertruck, right? That wasn't a Pontiac Aztec? I'm confused.
I mean, it's crazy out there. So why not just be crazy with them?
That's what I thought buying the Cybertruck was for. And then we took it to a whole nother level.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But the last thing that I wanted to kind of touch on, you guys had sent me this Waymo Toyota.
Oh, yeah.
Let me bring this up.
Which is smart for Waymo. Like Waymo has the tech, but they don't have any real easy ways of scaling. And selling it third-party or licensing it to all the auto manufacturers, I think this is a good move on their part because they partnership with just one and then work together.
So let me ask you guys, I'm not sure if you guys know the answer to this, because I've noticed that all the Waymos are Jaguars, aren't they? They're the Jaguar EV. So I'm assuming that's a partnership that they have with them. Toyota, is this going to, Toyotas are going to be Waymos, or what are they doing here exactly? Because I unfortunately didn't read through this.
I think that I'm trying to find before I get myself in trouble. I'm trying to find, because I sent you guys that article.
Uh-huh.
That Reddit post. Originally it was a Reddit post. I sent you guys the Waymo article. Damn it. So somewhere in here, trying to cut around without getting too wrong about this, somebody called out the fact that the safety system that Toyota uses, which I guess is like a standard, an industry standard or something like that, Waymo is hoping to team up with Toyota because there's apparently a lot of other cars that have the same base system, whatever it is. And I'm trying to find the name before I sound like too much of an asshole.
The Toyota Safety Sense.
Safety Sense, yes.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those, if they can get integrated to the Toyota Safety Sense, then they could potentially build on top of that with retrofits, I think, to improve. And then also kind of create more of a system to forge forward, maybe in an area where Toyota has hit, like, look, we are not a autonomous driving system manufacturer. We make the software that does what we can code for. We are not as sophisticated as a Waymo. And maybe this, because we've been talking about so much the full self driving licensing, Tesla licensing FSD to other companies and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the other side of that same exact conversation. It's Toyota and Waymo. Waymo wants to start licensing their technology because it gets to a point where it's like, okay, you've got something that somebody else doesn't have, but you don't have the mechanism by which to sell it to everybody. You have your little Waymo cars that, people love spray painting on and you've got Tesla, so you have to own a Tesla or whatever. But I think that being able to start kind of selling it to a larger audience is going to be critical to the valuation that everybody's banking on for all of this autonomous driving software.
Yeah, I think that's, once again, like you said, we've been kind of touching on that I think all vehicles will kind of jump on board with this as the software is being sold to them. Not everybody is a technology company, So one thing, I'll talk from my experience with the Hummer. So the Hummer has the Super Cruise. Super Cruise is nowhere near FSD, Tesla's. Yeah.
Nobody's near FSD.
No.
But yes.
But the Hummer does things that I enjoy so far that maybe the Tesla Cybertruck wasn't really doing. But from a technology standpoint, I mean, it's not even close. And I understood that going into, if I was going into this whole situation that I went into of selling the Cybertruck and potentially buying something other than a Cybertruck, I understood whatever I get is not going to have the same technology. Mm-hmm. But what I guess Waymo and Toyota are saying is, hey, let's combine each other. Let's kind of get together. You help me, I help you. And I think that's the future. I think Tesla's going to eventually do that. I don't know what their price point's going to be. I'm sure it's going to be crazy high. But Waymo has a good footing in this. So that's really great to see that Toyota's getting on board with them. And they're going to work together to kind of bring that technology hopefully over to their vehicles. And yeah, in turn, help Waymo with some of the safety sense. And so it's a good marriage. It's great to see that people are finally getting on board and collaborating and saying, how can you help me? How can I help you? And then let's just make the consumer happier.
Yeah. And or catch up on market share that they've been unable to try to gain into. I mean, Tesla is the only company that everybody thinks you can buy
exactly
an autonomous vehicle. And, you know, like I think I sent you that other article where was it Comma AI has they're offering $100 off the price of the software, and they're offering free harnesses. So mm-hmm. It's like that. I personally believe that the world of coders can accomplish anything if given the right data. And that's why I'm like, Tesla is at the forefront of some really compelling autopilot, even if they aren't at what is everybody expects to be level 3 or level 4 or something. I really do believe that Comma AI is the best positioned to become the second best competitor in that space, because I think that they have so many eyes working and refining the software that what they're missing is the data. And I think that seeing the price of seeing the price of the harnesses dropping already, and they want it in more cars because they need that data. They need those drivers driving those miles. If Tesla and Comma AI somehow managed to merge or something, I think we would have basically level 4 by next year or something in a very reasonably short period of time, because then you have the wildly huge pile of data that Tesla has accumulated from their fleet of vehicles over the years. And then you have Comma AI, which once they can also apply their own techniques to refining the autopilot system that maybe the dojo's been struggling with or just needs some outside refinement to, I think that we'd be sitting in the backs of cars sleeping on the way to work by next year.
I still think it's a pure cost thing that they're looking at. Like, I was just looking that the Jaguar EVs are all $60,000 to $70,000 a piece, where Toyota's BZ4X is starting MSRP at $37,000. So it's half the cost for more vehicles that they can finally get up on the road.
Yeah, it's cost is a thing. That's why Slate's jumping on board and going, hey. So that's going to be interesting. I wonder if at some point you can get a Comma AI onto a Slate. That would then...
That'd be cool.
That would be...
I'd be curious, but I think that there's got to be some sort of a lane guidance. It has to capitalize on the ability for the vehicle to turn the wheel, to actuate it. So I'm not sure if that's there for Tesla. I'm sorry, for Slate, but I do wonder if that's something that somebody will be like, yeah, you know what, Slate upgraded and they have a package now where you can change out the front axle to have that kind of control, a computer control that you can pass off to Comma AI. That's the cool thing with Slate. It's again the Lego, whatever you want to make with it. And I do think that other companies are going to swoop in. They'd be like, hey, you're going to sell a lot of these. We'd love to put a camera so that we can learn how to do autopilot shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Before we wrap this up, I wanted to show you guys something that I came across on the interweb. And that was, let's pull it up here. That is semis, Tesla semis in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this video where you can see a Pepsi, branded Tesla semi truck down on the highway. And then I've even seen a video with the Frito-Lay. There's a Frito-Lay truck, a semi-truck. So, I mean, that's really, really cool. Really cool to see that they're out there now. They're out on the road. They're doing the deliveries. I'm extremely curious to see how these are being charged. What does that look like? What does that infrastructure look like?
It's the mega charger, isn't it?
It's supposed to. So
it's a plug that looks enormous.
I guess where my question is, Pepsi is a big brand, you know, and their warehouses are huge and all that. So is Tesla going and installing these at their locations, or are there already locations out in the wild that they're driving up to? I wonder how that's all working out. I wonder how they're achieving the charging for these things.
I think that it was the design back in the day was that, you know, you'd have the chargers at the locations at the factories.
Okay.
And the first round of Tesla semis that were going out were supposed to go to back and forth runs, you know, bringing from a regional warehouse to a district warehouse or whatever. And the idea was when it's parked, being loaded or unloaded is when it gets mega charged at the locations. So I would imagine that they're probably not out on the road a whole lot of places. However, I think that I did see in the Tesla subreddit, or maybe the Tesla Lounge subreddit, somebody had posted that they encountered one of the few available, like accessible of semi mega chargers. And, you know, it was a woman who was like literally holding the plug, and it was like, you know, like, I don't know, size of a shoe, jeez, like a sneaker, like that just plugged in. But it was a squared out kind of a shape. And yeah, but I mean, I guess that I don't think that we're going to see a whole lot of them until more adoption happens. And then maybe if more freight shipping EVs go with the semi, then, or who knows, maybe whatever their charging standard is for that mega charger plug becomes something that's used in all trucks. We'll start seeing more of them, but ramble off.
No, that's, you know, that's good information, because that's what I was wondering. Because you don't pull up to a supercharger and you see these, you know, Tesla semi truck charging stations. So
I've always wanted to.
You know, I'm just curious where are they at. And I would assume, because it's Pepsi and they probably put in an order for however many, and so it's worth it to Tesla to put a charging station in their yard. And at the end of the day, there's a guy that goes around and he plugs them all in and charges them up, so that way the next day they're ready to go. So I'm sure that's probably what's
happening. I would imagine it's probably like the responsibility of the driver, literally. I mean, he just pulls into the spot and there's a charging plug that he just has to, you know, pick up and manhandle over and plug into the side of the truck, and then they unload or load or whatever, and he just waits. And yeah, I mean, it's still cool. I love stuff like this.
Chris is in chat, and you know what, Chris? I totally forgot about that, but he makes a good point. He says there are actually a few companies testing the semi already for a couple
of
years.
That's right. Thank you,
Pepsi,
Chris.
I forgot Frito-Lay.
Frito-Lay was definitely on
board. Walmart, and then he says, I shared one of the first videos of Walmart Tesla trucks on 99 Freeway by Fresno. He really did. Hmm. That was, I don't know, what was it, Chris? Maybe a year ago? Where he was the first. I think that video kind of went viral for him. He posted a video on the 99 freeway of a Tesla semi truck driving it. So that was
when the video goes live, Chris, be sure to comment your video so that people can check that out. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Chris has a YouTube channel of his own, Accelerating Tech. So check out his YouTube channel. He does a bunch of Tesla content. So if you're into that, check him out. He does really good stuff over there. So other than that, guys, that's all I got for tonight. So
I was going to tell you my really dumb Rivian story if you want.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the most recent update that went out, 2025.10.01. I was looking forward to it. Not that it actually has anything beneficial to me, but whatever. And so I got it installed, and within the first week, my head unit crashed like 3 or 4 times while I was driving, just because I was listening to Bluetooth. And I went and looked up in the Rivian forum, and people are like, yeah, there's a Bluetooth leak. There's a memory leak in whatever they did to the Bluetooth. So now it just crashes basically the head unit, like both clusters shut off and then turn back on again. Car drives fine. The music even keeps playing, but it's like a whole thing crashes. Really? So about a couple days ago, I went to get in my car, and I had noticed that the main cluster had no LTE access, had no Wi-Fi that I could turn on or off, and had no SOS phone call abilities. And I then went through the whole process of trying to do the soft reset, did the buttons, the screens rebooted, but the LTE and Wi-Fi didn't come back up. So, and one thing to note is that if the LTE is not connected or the car has no data connectivity, you can't use Driver Plus. It doesn't work without an active data connection at all times. So, really? Again, a reason why Tesla is kind of kicking their ass at that point. So then I try to do the hard reset, which doesn't actually work if your car is in this kind of like weird arrest mode. So I could still drive my car. Everything worked great, but I couldn't do Driver Plus. I couldn't the Bluetooth worked, but I didn't have any LTE connectivity or Wi-Fi. And I was worried if I had to go to a supercharger, it wouldn't work because there's no data connectivity to talk to the mothership or whatever. So I wound up needing to manually reboot the car. So Tesla, you know, you can power off the car, but it doesn't kill power. Same thing with a Rivian. There's no way to push a button to tell it to turn off. So I had to open up the hood, go inside, pull the fireman's loop, and detach the 12-volt battery for 5 minutes, plug it all back in again. And then finally, the system rebooted and re-enabled the comms communications with the LTE and Wi-Fi. And wow. I was like, this is the dumbest kind of reboot I've ever had to execute on anything, on a computer, on a car, on anything. I had to pull the damn fireman loop and then reattach it later, but then literally disable the battery to the point where the whole computer was finally going to reboot itself.
Wow. And it hasn't done it since?
No. I mean, I fixed it just this afternoon, and then I took a very, very long nap. But it's been a week, you know, man. But yeah, I just thought that was like that. It's like there is no meaningful reboot system, like you know, Chase knows computers. It's like, you know, at least there's a push and hold the power button forces a hardware shutdown, so you can cold boot it and actually get it up and running again. The fact that EVs don't have that for consumers, I think, is kind of dumb. But apparently, you can disconnect the batteries, just you know, turn it off and on.
It's funny that you bring that up because now that I'm a Hummer owner, Reddit, I've seen a lot of posts on Reddit that whenever there's any type of issue, this type of issue, the screen's going black or some type of weird little thing, it's telling you that it can't shift into drive or something. Everybody just goes, oh, just disconnect the 12 volt, wait a little bit, reconnect it, and you'll be good. And that kind of seems to be the fix for apparently Rivian and Hummer and who knows who else.
I was going to say, somebody could come along with like some sort of a little module that you just attach to the negative terminal on your 12-volt battery and have it Bluetooth enabled and have it so that you can activate a gateway or close a gateway and basically just have it so you can reboot your 12-volt battery from your phone just anywhere. Then, yeah, then just disconnect the fireman loop, press the button, wait a few minutes. You know, way less screwing and digging around and stuff. But, of course, Tesla's like, we don't want you to reboot it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they... Yeah, I agree with you. There should be some type of way to do that, but...
It's like, I feel like at this point, it should just be a requirement. You know, if you're going to run the whole thing off of a computer, the computer needs to be able to be turned off and rebooted.
Right.
And that shouldn't require a freaking service visit a week from now.
Yeah.
Just press and hold the damn power button. 100%.
Well, on that note, I'm going to reboot my computer. So
wait till it uploads. Don't reboot.
So thank you, everybody, that joined us this week in chat. Obviously, Chris, Hugo, Jay, Mark, Environmental Canadian, everybody. Hopefully, I didn't miss anybody, but we appreciate you guys as always. And
we appreciate the Canadians still coming over and hanging out, even though the given climate.
Thank you, Canadian. So we'll see you guys all on the next episode. Have a good night.